Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. David Phelps, and we'll be talking about his work as well as his new book, What's Your Next? The Blueprint for Creating Your Freedom Lifestyle. Dr. David Phelps owned and managed a private practice dental office for more than 21 years. While still in dental school, he began his investment in real estate by joint venturing with his father on their first rental property in 1980. 3 years later, they sold the property, and David took his $25,000 capital gain share and leveraged it into 31 properties that later produced $15,000 monthly net cash flow. Life was good, sky was the limit, until the dark day that David's daughter, Jenna, was diagnosed with leukemia. In the midst of cancer treatments, epilepsy, and ultimately a liver transplant for Jenna, David made the crucial decision to leave his clinical practice so that he could spend every moment with his daughter. David's Plan B, a portfolio of cash flow producing real estate assets, gave him the freedom to focus 100% on what mattered most to him. Jenna won the battle with the disease, and David still enjoys the freedom to cherish every moment with her that he can. Today, David is a nationally recognized speaker on creating freedom, building businesses, and investing in real estate. He also combines his professional and personal experiences to illustrate how the tactical and aspirational work together. Illustrate how tactical and inspirational can work together. David helps others, professionals, become dreamers, and then strategically manifest those dreams into freedom. He authors a monthly newsletter, Path to Freedom, and hosts the Dentist Freedom Blueprint podcast. Freedom Founders Mastermind Community grows exponentially year by year, providing the pathway to freedom for many professionals. David's new book, which we'll learn about today, is called What's Your Next? The Blueprint for Creating Your Freedom Lifestyle. And it chronicles his story and provides a guide and a call to action to others who are yearning to experience the freedom lifestyle. For more information, you can visit his website, which is drphelps.com, and that's drphelps.com. And you can also find out more by visiting the Mastermind website, which is freedomfounders.com. Okay, with that, I'd like to welcome David to the show. Good day, David.
Robert, good day. Great to be here, sir.
Thank you very much, and boy, I'm really anxious to talk with you, and hopefully we can empower our listeners to be to have more freedom in their life. As I mentioned in the introduction, you know, there was that one period that happened with your daughter, Jenna, that kind of was a critical point for your decision to change your path. So would you mind sharing a little bit more with the listeners, kind of what was your experience like up to that point, and how did that diagnosis with her change your thinking?
Sure, Robert. You know, I was a very focused, driven young man at really a very early age. I remember being a young man, I wanted my independence, not away from my family, but I wanted enough independence where I could buy the things that I wanted as a young man. My parents were good parents. They didn't just give me or my sisters what we wanted. You know, we had chores, and if we wanted something extra, you know, we had to figure out a way to get that. But, you know, for me as a young man, I wanted a specific kind of a bike. You know, I wanted a 5-speed Schwinn apple crate when I think I was probably like 10, 11, or 12. I love to play tennis, and I want to take tennis lessons. I wanted my own black and white little portable TV for my room, so I didn't have to, you know, share in the TV shows the family were watching, you know, in the family room. So I had this independent streak about me at an early age, and that was you know, part of seeing freedom. I think at an early age, even as a child, in a good family, I went on to school, and I was pretty good in school, so I could, you know, pass tests. I could memorize information and regurgitate, which is so much of what seems like formal education is today. But that gave me, I think, inroads to go into dentistry, which I decided was a good path because it was a respected profession. From all things I could see as a young man, you know, being a doctor or a dentist, could be a lawyer, you know, CPA, engineer, were all career paths that, you know, appeared to be where you could make a pretty good lifestyle and have some security and hopefully have some freedom. So that's why I saw it as a young age. And so I went down that path, and as you alluded to in my biography, when I was in college and, you know, going through and still taking all the courses, the prerequisites I had to get into dental school, I just had a curiosity about how to be a better steward of money, you know, investments. Now, I didn't have money at that time. I had school debt, not as much as kids have today, but I still, back in the late 70s, I had school debt to get through school. But I read some books about, you know, investing money. I was curious about it. I read books about the stock market. I read books about real estate. And between the two, the real estate really caught my interest. It just was a tangible asset class. It was something that I felt like, you know, I could learn and understand. I just really couldn't understand Wall Street and the stock market. So I left that aside. And when I entered my first year in dental school in Dallas, Texas in 1980, I was thinking about what I'd learned about real estate. And I called my dad, who lived a couple states away in Colorado, and I said, "Dad, I said, you know, I'm going to be going to school here for 4 years. How about if we together might, you know, buy an investment property? You know, you put up the money and the credit, and I'll manage it. You know, kind of a 50-50 proposition." And fortunately, he said, "I'll consider it." So he came down to Dallas. We spent a few weekends looking at different locations, and we found an estate sale property, and we bought it, and did just what I said. You know, he put up the financing because I didn't have the capital or the credit to do it as a student with debt. But I was the manager, and I learned a lot of good things about management. But here's what the other thing I realized, Robert, is that while I was going to school, I was also waiting tables at restaurants, you know, evenings and weekends to help, you know, pay the freight, so I wouldn't have as much debt coming out of school. And what I realized is after 3.5 years of owning that rental property and managing it, that the gain or the profit that I was able to split with my dad when we sold that property was more than what I could make, you know, weekends and nights working in a restaurant, even with good tips, and the hours I was invested in managing that property during those 3.5 years was much less than the time I put at the restaurant. So that gave me a little bit of a clue as to why owning some kind of assets was something that I wanted to continue to do, because I realized even though I was going to go work a career, be a dentist, that learning to be a good steward of money that I had to invest would be a smart thing to do. So I went forward with that. I went forward into dental practice, but I continued on the side to buy rental properties. It all was good, and all was good until Jenna, my only child, my only child, at age 2.5, she was diagnosed with high-risk leukemia, and that was, you know, something that I had not prepared for. I had not been conditioned by any previous experience in my life with my immediate family of anybody going through a difficult illness or life-threatening illness or cancer. I just had not dealt with it. And so it was just slapped me on the side. And yet I felt like I was supposed to be the head of the family. I was supposed to make sure everything was still good. I was supposed to keep a financial situation at hand. And so I worked really hard to do that. But I did realize that there was a bigger need for me to be more emotionally connected to my family. I just, you know, it's just, you don't know what you don't know. So I'll speed this up because I know you've got some good questions. But
no, it's fine.
But I'll fast forward.
No, it's important.
Okay.
You're covering a lot of things that I think people are experiencing right now. So I think I appreciate you going into that detail.
All right. Well, good. Well, then I'll continue. So, you know, I was a young man who felt like that if I did everything right in life, if I worked hard, if I had integrity, I served people well, in this case in my dental practice, you know, that I could control and have a good life and have the family that I wanted. And this situation with Jenna, with her liver, her liver, that came later, but her diagnosis with leukemia, was something that I just didn't have any training for. So Jenna made it through. It was 3 years of really, I tell you, it was hell on earth. It was just, you know, and I know people listening today are going through, have gone through, and will go through either themselves or with a family member some kind of a crisis. It's just, you know, you live long enough in life and you're going to deal with these things. But I wasn't really prepared for that emotionally or with any training, so I did the best I could. And Jenna made it, but the marriage to her mother did not. We didn't succeed. And, again, it was a no-fault situation. It was, looking back, it was the two of us, we only knew what we knew. And our focus went totally towards Jenna, and we were physically and emotionally spent most of the time during those 3 years just trying to keep things going. And Jenna's mother was just an angel advocate for Jenna. She took all that on. While I got outside the house to go, you know, make the living, she was really, and I use the word imprisoned because you don't think about being imprisoned with your family or your child, but you think about it this way, Robert, when you have a person, in this case a young child, she was 2.5 to 5, and she had, you know, this horrific battle with leukemia where at any moment she could spike a fever because her immune system is depressed. I mean, that's how they try to fight cancer, is they go after the entire body and try to get the cancer cells at the same time, but it leaves the person very vulnerable to just fevers or anything else. And so we couldn't ever leave Jenna, just even to really leave with a babysitter, because she's too young. And so her mother, Jenna's mother, really took that on. And looking back, I admire her, and we're good friends today. I just want to make sure we're good friends. We co-parented Jenna, even though we weren't in the same household. But my admiration for her, you know, built over the years, because I realized she actually had the tougher battle between the two of us as parents. She had the tougher battle. And so I think one of the lessons I learned out of that period, Robert, was that even though we're going through tough times ourselves, there's other people that are also going through difficult times, and so don't feel like you're alone. Don't be a soloist. Don't try to be the rugged individual and fight through yourself. If I would have been a part of other groups, or if I'd been a part of a men's group, or had some people that I trusted relationships, I would have probably gotten through it better. So lesson number one: don't do life by yourself. Even though we're kind of built to do that in many cases, don't do that. So let me just push forward a little bit here, and we'll kind of get to the point where I made some significant changes in my life. Jenna survived leukemia. She had a period of about 4 years from age 8 to 12 where, unfortunately, she had some epileptic seizure activity that was difficult to control at best. I mean, she was on medications for that, but she still had breakthrough seizures once, twice a week where it just kind of, you know, put her out for the day. I don't mean she was unconscious, but people that deal with seizures or know anything about that, there's different types of seizures, but oftentimes people that deal with seizures, it can just really knock them out, kind of make them kind of non-functional for you know, hours at a time. And so Jenna wasn't really able to participate fully, you know, in school. She was in and out a lot during leukemia, during her seizure time. And then at age 12, this was in 2004. At age 12, Jenna was vomiting blood. And so again, scary. What's going on? What could be happening now? So Jenna's mother took her to a local hospital where they lived. They didn't know how to. It was beyond their capability. So Meta flight her to Dallas, with the bigger city, where. Within 3 days, they diagnosed her with end-stage liver failure. So she'd gone through all this chemotherapy for leukemia. She'd had these seizures, and so she had all the medication for seizure. And her liver, it just was too toxic for her liver. And so she had a liver that was not functioning, and that's why she was vomiting blood. The liver wasn't processing and filtering blood the way it's meant to be. So now we've got the situation where you know, how do we solve this? Because unlike kidney failure, there's no dialysis or intermediary treatment for a liver that's failing. I mean, it's you can only do some temporary things. Eventually, without a new liver, you know, Jenna wouldn't make it. So now I'm going back into my typical mode of, well, I got to fix this thing. This is David the fixer. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but I'm not saying it's a good thing either, Robert, because, again, I'm talking about sometimes being too focused on fixing things instead of just being present. And I want to make sure our listeners understand that I'm looking back at my life now reflectively and not with regrets, but just with lessons learned, which is the point of life. So we got her set up with a transplant center in Houston, Texas. She's on the list now. So you go on the list, and it's a point system based on age and based on the doctor's assessment of the potential success of a transplant. And if you're too sick or you're too old or different things, then you're not going to be very high on the list. Well, Jenna was pretty high on the list, at least at that time, because they were able to do some things to keep the liver situation going for a while. 3 months after her diagnosis, Jenna's mom gets the call from the hospital saying, okay, this is your day. Their bags are always packed, by the way. They've got bags in the car ready to go, because when you get the call that you have an opportunity for the transplant, you got to go. And so they have volunteers around the country, and these are great people who are private pilots, and they volunteer anytime that there's a transplant patient that needs a flight to the medical center. They're there, and boom, they'll fly them for free. I mean, this is just you know, a godsend of volunteers. So that happened for Jenna and her mom. I come from Dallas, so I took a different route. But you know, getting there to the hospital, and I remember you know, going down that day, thinking, well, this is the day that, you know, we were kind of waiting for in terms of, you know, she needs this transplant. She's got to have a transplant. But then I'm also very, very frightened of this, because I realized, Robert, this is big surgery. This, you know, an organ transplant is major, major surgery. And of course, the medicine today is very advanced, and they do good things. But still, there's outcomes that, you know, can be not the desired outcome. So I'm kind of got my heart in my throat thinking about this day. And I get down there in time to see Jenna being wheeled into surgery. And 6 hours later, you know, they come out, and the doctors come out and say, it's done. I mean, the procedure's done, and they felt like, you know, successful, and now it's the recovery. And the recovery is going to be long and lengthy. You don't get out in a week and go home. We had to have a place to stay in Houston for the next 3 months, because they've got to be really on top of the whole thing, because things can go wrong. They have to, and things did go wrong, not bad things, but, I mean, they have to support this whole new organ in the body and get the immune system adapted to it. I mean, it's a long process. And so here's my point. I was still in practice, but I was going back and forth from the Dallas area to Houston, and I'd leave my practice for, you know, a week at a time to be there with Jenna, because I'm afraid. I want this to go well, but I'm thinking, you know, have I lost my opportunity to be the dad I want to be? Am I going to try to make up for time for it right now? I'll do the best I can, but, you know, maybe it's too late. And as I'm sitting in the hospital room, just watching her breathe, you know, she has all the IV tubes, all the monitors on her. She's breathing oxygen, and just watching her breathe. And then looking at all the medication bottles, I think we counted there's 32 bottles of pills and medications that she had to take initially. It's not that bad today, but initially, 32. And it was just, the whole thing's mind-boggling to me. I mean, Robert, I'm thinking that this is so surreal. I mean, this can't be my life, because it's not what I planned on. It's not what I designed. It's not what I signed up for, and yet here I am, and the reality is, yes, it is my life, and what am I going to do about it? I'm not the doctor that performs the surgery or takes care of Jenna, because that's not my field. But what am I, as dad, going to do about the situation? What can I do differently that I haven't done before? And so while I was there at the hospital with Jenna recovering and had finally time to really reflect, and this is a key, because I was such a busy go-go-getter all my life, I just never took time to really think about, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, is it, who's put this on me, right? If I just put this on myself. And I decided then, Robert, that I'm going to sell my dental practice. Yeah, I'm going to sell. I'm going to let that go and free myself up so that I don't have to be constrained by worried about a dental practice and all the patients and the staff and all the people that dependent upon me, but also my daughter was dependent upon me. And it's a hard decision, but not so hard when it's a family member. I'm going to say it wasn't an easy decision, and we can dive into this a little bit, but that's the long answer to the question you asked me, but I kind of want to give you some insights and the listeners' insights today about the fact that these travails and tribulations that we go through in life, we know that they're not easy, and I never want to make light of the fact that the decisions I made, whether they were right or wrong at the time, they were the best decisions I could make at the time. And, you know, the lessons that come out of those are things I want to pass on to people today that are also maybe going through tough decisions making in their own lives.
Yeah, I agree. Boy, there is a few things I kind of want to jump on or kind of talk about first. I mean, one of the things you mentioned, you know, about imprisoned, you know, that the idea of you said you used your word, but you didn't want to use your word. The thing is I think often people who are unexpected caregivers, you know, that have to, all of a sudden, you know, it becomes their life, that it can have that sense of feeling imprisoned. And a lot of people, I'm sure, feel guilty about, I don't want to, I shouldn't feel that I'm in prison. I should feel that, this is my mother, this is my wife, or whatever, that I shouldn't feel in prison. But the fact is we're our own unique souls on our little old journey, and that, the opposite of the imprisonment is the freedom. And, and that's a very important part of your book is freedom. So I think that it's, important to recognize that, that's it's a legitimate feeling. And then the solution to shift it around is freedom. So yeah. That was one thing that I wanted to kind of mention for the listeners. And then also you mentioned about not doing it by yourself. That's so important. So if people are going through that issue right now, definitely look for, groups or some type of support to be able to help with that. And so anyway, those were just a couple of the things that I just really wanted. I felt they were important, for people to recognize. And these are things that you learned, in hindsight and reflection. But I think people can maybe speed up the process a little bit if it's in their awareness that's the case.
Exactly. There's so much that, life situations that we all are going to have to deal with or do deal with, and there's so many things that we don't know. I think a positive part is find other people that have gone through something similar or maybe going through, use the community, use people, utilize the benefits of people that can give some insight and perspective. It's something I didn't do during that time, and that was that was a mistake. But again, it wasn't something I was taught. I was, we go through school, in life, and you don't get to collaborate. You have to take the test by yourself. You have to pass everything by yourself. There's no collaboration.
Right.
So getting out, it's like, well, then how do I do that? Right. I you feel like you're vulnerable. You feel like you're weak. It's like no. The opposite. You're stronger when you do things with other people that you know I can trust. So yeah, great points.
Yeah, and you're, right, like in the 70s, things weren't this, you don't have the internet, you're not doing
right.
These kinds of things that, so the awareness isn't there and the resources aren't there, but now they are. I mean, now we can have that. Now, you mentioned, training and that kind of thing. You obviously going to dental school was a very, I don't want to say, it's a conventional, it's a very solid kind of, approach to what you're going to be doing for your work. Now, you mentioned the point that in the hospital that you kind of, there was that shift. So tell us a little bit about how, the training that you got in dental school, how that may have affected, because sometimes it's rather structured, and then when it comes time when we have these periods of sudden change, that structure gets shaken. So can you tell us a little bit about, kind of what dental school taught you and what it didn't teach you, as far as making that shift.
Right. Well, you're right. It's very regimented, very structured. It's scientific. It's analytic. I mean, which is a lot of who I am. I am that very logical, rational person, and that's good. That's good in certain areas, right? It's a good thing. You want a doctor or somebody who's the NASA scientist who's going to help get the rocket ship to the moon or whatever to be very detailed and analytic. So that there's good to that, but there's also the negative side to it is that that regimentation, that structure, that kind of always being in control, that always being able to plan everything out for the long run. When that gets disrupted, which it will, then it's like, how is a person like me prepared to deal with that? Well, I'm a lot better today because I've accepted, the fact that this is the way life is. I actually embrace, not that I embrace the things, the challenges. I don't look for them, Robert, but when something comes up, that's a curveball that comes. It's like, okay, well, this is life. So I learned to look at it differently. But back then, no. That's why I'm saying it was just so out of the blue and out of character for what I saw as my vision of life. It's like, well, how could this happen? What did I do here? Well, of course, I didn't do anything. But because this is my family of origin, I didn't see any of that. Now had I experienced that somewhere else in my life, then I probably would have been more adaptable. And said, okay, well, I've seen this before. It's not going to be fun. It's not fair. But look, it's life. So I would have been in a better position. But you're so right to talk about the regimentation or the structure of maybe the way we've been brought up, or in this case, school, can set us up sometimes in not a good way to deal with the parts of life that are unplanned or that we can't necessarily control.
To me, it seems that, and one of the things is you are completely correct in that, if I'm going to have a dentist, I want him paying attention to details, or a doctor. So, I mean, and for certain people, that is a strength, and that is, just a position, a sense of being. But the contra side to that is that with that change and I understand what you're saying about the embracing that change. I get to the point I like to have things planned out, but then whenever there's a curveball, I just basically look at it as a way I'm being nudged somewhere else in a different direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So And so I kind of say thanks. Okay, well, I didn't see where that was going to be going, but I appreciate the help.
Right. Well, that's so true. That's really what as I look back and I've had a chance to I think be relevant to other people that I have a chance to engage with and younger people, but also my peer group because everybody goes through challenges and I am by no means, have all the wisdom. We all have our own experiences. But when you can share your own experiences, and everybody has a story. We all have a story, and I think we discount our stories. I think too often we think that we're not worthy of providing help, guidance in some way to some person or some group of people. And I think people that are listening today, think about whatever you've gone through in life. It is your story. It's unique to you. And rather than look at whatever that has happened to you as negative as it might have been when you were going through it, but look back and say, well, what were the good things that came out? What did I learn or how were the other people around me affected that had some positive outcomes? And in doing so, then you've got an opportunity to take those lessons, that wisdom that you have acquired through your own experience, and share that with other people. And to me in life, today, not where I was, 20 years ago, Robert, but today, I feel like my bigger purpose and meaning in life is to share what I can with people that I can help in some way. And it's just, and there's no better way to do that than share through stories of real life.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And it's, just the fact of your experience with that, having an analytical portion of your life, and then having to shift. I mean, that applies to so many people. So I mean, they would resonate with exactly, well, I know exactly what, I may not be a dentist, but I know exactly the kind of person, you know, the trait that they were talking about that fit me. So, well, we're about halfway through the show already, David. Boy, it's just flying by. I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to I want to invite listeners that if you have any questions you would like to call in, the number is 619-789-4359. And those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them there. And then when we come back, David, I want to kind of get your perspective, you know, with all of the big changes that have been happening with this year and just in different kinds of shift, I kind of want to get your view of what you kind of see, you know, from up and coming when it comes to, you know, financial matters and economy and wealth and how this kind of all, how does this pair, I mean, this has to be an ultimate test for someone who doesn't like change is to what we're going through. So I kind of want to talk about, okay, so let's talk about that when we come back.
Sounds good.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, my special guest today is Dr. David Phelps, and we're talking about his new book, What's Your Next? The Blueprint for Creating Your Freedom Lifestyle. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is drphelps.com, and that's spelled out drphelps.com. And then you can find out more about the mastermind group, Freedom Founders, at freedomfounders.com. Okay, with that, we're back, David.
All right, yes, Robert, I'm here.
Great, okay. So, your book is called What's Your Next? And so can you share with the listeners what your view of this particular time period we're going through and how, you know, looking at what's your next maybe is, like, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And if I may, I'm just going to give a more relevant website for the book. People could go to findyournext.com. And the book's also available for pre-order right now on Amazon. To your point, Robert, even before this last year in 2020, when, you know, out of the blue comes the, you know, COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, even before that time, let's just think about how fast the world has been changing in just the last decade, since even 2010. The amount of information, the information sharing, the internet, technology overall in so many areas is changing really at almost light speed. It's today, like today, what we know today about, you know, how we work, we live, we communicate, how we, you know, how we do, how we access information, our business models, you know, this year, next year, there will be some kind of changes. In 3 years, almost everything almost turns over. And so, really, as a civilization, we have never experienced things that change this rapidly. That can be difficult. Again, for most of us, and myself included, I kind of like to get into some kind of routine. I like things to be kind of normalized. We just talked about things not being normal, Robert, and of course now I'm shifting back. But yeah, if I could have a life that I could show up every day and know what it looks like and know what the world's going to look like, wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, it's not the way it is. So things are happening faster. Now you throw a black swan event like coronavirus in, which has disrupted everything. And we're still disrupted. We're not through with that. But it's caused a lot of forced change for just about everybody. I don't know anybody who could say they have not been affected by the virus this past year. And so as I was sitting in the hospital with Jenna, this is some, 16 years ago, it wasn't a global change that was happening. It was a personal change in my own little life, my own life with my family, but it was still as significant as the virus. So I had to look at that and say, what is this imputing me to do or consider? What do I need to think about here? Do I just go back and just keep doing the same thing I've been doing, which is, again, kind of trying to go back to what we know, because we're always comfortable with what we know. Even if what we're doing, the way we're living our life or our business or our finances, even if it's not getting us exactly what we want, at least we know what it is, so we get comfortable and say, okay, well, to shift to something else seems even more scary than staying with what you know. But I would say to our listeners, look at the opportunity, a little bit like I had to do. Was it easy for me to sell my dental practice to potentially never go back and do dentistry, even though I had all those years of education, training, capital that was put into it? Was that easy to let that go? No, it wasn't. But I can tell you on the other side that very, very quickly I could see that what that was allowing me to do, that decision I made was allowing me to open doors that up until that point I wouldn't have thought of opening. Well, I didn't have time. I didn't have capacity. I was too busy doing what I was doing. And so I think look at the change, look at the disruption today that you've gone through this last year, that you're going through right now, that you may go through, in the near future. Look at the change and the disruption as an opportunity. That's hard. It's hard to think about that way. But what doors could open? What does this change force you to do, to behave differently? It might push you to reach out and develop some relationships in other areas with other people. I said earlier, don't go solo in life. I have learned so much from other people, and I used to be a big soloist, Robert. Again, as I said, I tried to hunker down and do everything myself because I thought I was supposed to do it that way. And I realized today that the biggest opportunities that I found in shifting my life from being a dentist to what I do today didn't come from me just sitting in my room by myself. Now, meditation's good, thinking's good, but I also need to get out in the world a little bit. And don't feel sorry for yourself or your situation. Just realize that other people are going through tough times. Get out there, talk to people, find groups of people. And today, as you said, Robert, it's easier because you can do it, virtually if you want to. You can do it, on the internet. There's all kinds of forums and support groups. But I think being actually with people when you can, there's even a stronger relationship building. So you can do some of both. But look at it as an opportunity, because the world is not going to get simpler. It's going to only get more complex. And so instead of fighting that, how can we adapt? How can we adapt and still live lives that are congruent to who we are, what our values are? Doesn't mean you have to buy into everything that's happening out there. I'm not saying to do that, but how can we as individuals and as family members and as community leaders and however we want to have our impact, how can we still live lives congruent to ourselves but also be adaptable and flexible to what's going on around us?
Yeah, I agree. And the one thing, when you mentioned that it's, with all of the work and time invested up to the point of making a shift, I would think that that's a common feeling that people would think, after all I invested, why would I even consider kind of giving that up? And the one thing that I have learned is to recognize is that that none of it would have been wasted or lost. I mean, it was all part of the creation process. process that kind of created you, you know, the individual. So, you know, that's the one thing I think sometimes holds people back from considering what to do next is the fact that, you know, there was all of this investment, you know, and rather than looking at, I would think that maybe making a shift from thinking of the investment as just an investment, instead of being just an investment in what I'm going to do, it was just like an investment to my whole life, you know, and the skills it contributed and perspective it contributed. And so anyway,
find your next. That's exactly right. You know, what you said is I want to repeat that because you're right. We get caught in the sunk cost fallacy of we've invested so much time and effort and money and education in this thing, whatever it is. You know, there's no way I could lead that apart from that, shift from that anyway. And you're right, Robert. The healthy way to look at that is no. You know, whatever you put into what you've been doing to get you to where you are today, that's all just you're developing certain skill sets. And there's other skill sets that are transferable that we can take and iterate or shift or move as the world and circumstances kind of dictate to us or maybe make the opportunity to allow us to do that. So, 100% with you that whatever we've done up to now is just a preparation and an opportunity to go to the next.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about what's your next. Tell us about the book and, you know, kind of what it's about and, you know, what is it that inspired you to write it?
Well, yeah, the inspiration really has come from my working with a lot of the colleagues and members in the group that I formed about 10 years ago called Freedom Founders. And I deal mostly with colleagues in dentistry and medicine because that's where I came from. But the principles of what I've learned in my own life and what I've learned in helping and working with others is principles that I put in this book because I think so many people are like I have been in my life where I was focused on really one thing, and that was a definition of success that was more dictated by society or maybe my industry. You know, what does a dentist look like? You know, and that's typically as well, you know, you live in a certain neighborhood and you have a certain house and your kids go to a certain school and you have certain kind of vacations. It's like, that's the definition of success. Well, bad definition. I'm just saying because life is so much more than that. But see, I only knew what I knew. So what's your next really dives in the principles of helping people with self-discovery. I've got frameworks, I've got questions, I've got stories, my own story, but I think we learn through other people, as I said earlier, stories. And so helping people, you know, visualize what the potentially deeper impact in life that they can have, not that you don't have to have a job or a career or a business to make money. That's absolutely important. But I talk about, you know, there's actually, five freedoms, and I set up in a pyramid. In the bottom of the pyramid in the book, you'll see the first freedom is financial freedom. And talk about how to get there, how to determine what that number is. You don't have to get there before you have the other five freedoms, but having a pathway that can give you some certainty that you're going to get there, not when you, quote, get to, quote unquote, retirement age, because I don't believe in that retirement age thing. I think you should be able to live your life and evolve as you iterate. So financial freedom is the first one of the five freedoms. The second one, and these aren't in a particular order. I think financial freedom is the one that people like myself would strive for and then never really get there, or maybe get there when you're in your 60s or 70s, maybe get there. But, see, that's too long to wait for the other five freedoms, which are time freedom. I mean, how much do we just give up our time, give it away at the expense of driving for a false North Star? So time freedom, then relationship freedom. You know, relationships that we either should put more time into because they're important to us, or relationships that maybe we've outgrown and maybe are not healthy for us, but we put up with them again because we're on this drive for this certain goal that's been defined by success by society or industry. The next one is health. How many of us might, and I can raise my hand very high and say at times in my life, I neglected my health. Well, why? Because I've got to drive for this certain goal. I need to make a certain amount of money. I've got to have a certain amount of assets, investments. And so when I get to that point, Robert, then I'll go back and I'll take care of my health. Well, bad choice. I mean, how many people, you know, have money, but their health is gone, or they can't physically move anymore because they let it go. And then the top of my pyramid of five freedoms is very similar to Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, which is, he calls it self-actualization, which I call it your meaning, your purpose in life, how you like to have impact. It's your legacy. And I never thought about that when I was younger in life. I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind, was what's my legacy going to be? It was all about me. It was all about me, David Phelps, and I need to be this great person to help all these people and make money for my family. That was all I was about, and I was missing the boat. So What's Your Next is a book that I think will help people to look at their own life and, you know, examine it from different perspectives and ask themselves the questions of, what could be my next? What am I potentially missing in life right now because my goals that I have set in front of me are not the real goals that I want to have? Not to say that earning money, paying the bills is not important. It is very important. But if that's our North Star, then we're going to miss a lot of life, and I don't want people to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, we do have the basic human needs, you know, that we kind of, you know, as far as that hierarchy that we need to have. But once you get beyond that, or, you know, and even if that's impacted a little bit by some of the other ones, the wholesome kind of approach, looking at these, you know, various types of freedoms, I think would get people to question their basic beliefs, you know, and really kind of reevaluate. So I guess going through defining, you know, kind of where you stand on whether you're free or imprisoned in any of these elements, then the next step would be to create a blueprint, I guess, on how to go from there. Would that be correct?
Yeah, and so the blueprint is a construct that, again, you know, it's so fun to create things or frameworks with other people, because, again, this is something I couldn't have done on my own. But again, with other people, I look back in my own life and kind of pulled some key elements out, but I also had to look through the lens of other people, and as I've had the blessing to help other people, colleagues in my group. And again, I found, you know, other principles that were common as we kind of worked together, and I helped and watched them, you know, move to their next and to their larger impact place in life, and saw the changes that were happening. So creating the blueprint, again, it's going to be different for everybody. It's not a cookie cutter, but developing one's blueprint customized to them, there is a process to do that, and that's what I've laid out in the book. So the process to take with where you are today, say, to call that point A. Here's where I am today. Here's what my life looks like. And point B is what you'd like your life to look like. And again, I would incorporate all five freedoms: financial, time, relationships, health, you know, purpose and meaning. And at point B, and say, okay, point B, when would I like to hit point B? Well, maybe that's in 5 years, maybe it's in 10, depending upon your age and where you are. But you need to have a definition, a specific definition of what you want your life to look like. Be very, very clear. Be very specific. And then it's just a matter of reverse engineering. From that point B, where you want to be, what you want your life to look like, back to where you are today. Okay, so start with where you are today with what you have. Doesn't matter where you are, what you have, what your circumstances are. You now have, you know, a point B to go towards. And so the blueprint helps lay out the constructs to make that move, you know, and it gives you milestones. You know, an important part of trying to reach a transformation or a change in life is you've got to have some ways to measure your progress. It's never going to be straightforward. It's never going to happen just exactly as you plan. There's going to be some iterations. There's going to be, you know, go left, go right. Sometimes you take a step back before you go forward. But the ability to have some specific measurements along the way, again, with all five freedoms, is important, so it keeps you in alignment, so you don't get too far off track and one day wake up, wait a minute, how did I get over here? Well, I need to pull it back over here because I'm missing some elements here. So the blueprint with some specific metrics along the way is what is guides people along their own unique personal journey.
Yeah, you know, because I would think that what freedom means to freedom, what it means to each person is unique, and it would take into account all of those various freedoms that you talked about in varying degrees. And I would also think, wouldn't one's perception of freedom shift as well? I mean, in time, that things can happen that maybe, you know, you felt stronger, you know, with the relationship area, you know, than maybe the health, you know. So, I mean, what I'm thinking is that saying is that I think that, I mean, isn't it good to have that end goal in mind, but keep in mind that, like you say, things change, you can go from right to left, but that you adjust to circumstance.
Yes. Yeah. Always being open and willing to adjust, adapt. You know, be nimble, pivot. The point B that you might put out in, you know, in front of your future for 5 or 7 or 10 years out, absolutely that can shift. It's going to shift, and it's okay for it to shift because we all grow, we all evolve, we all mature. Our thinking changes as we go. But just having a point to work towards that. That, you know, getting you know, past the inertia and starting having some momentum, because it's a lot easier, as the saying goes, you know, to shift once you're in motion. An object standing still, it's very hard to move it, but once it's got some forward motion, then it can shift a little bit, and that's what you want to have. You want to have some movement forward, and not to be paralyzed by overanalysis, by over analyzing. Every aspect to quote, make sure. Well, you can never be sure. Again, that's where I think the counsel of other people, doing things, you know, with the perspective and wisdom of other people, you know, it's what I call like your inner five. You know, the people that you surround yourself with. It could be a family member if there's somebody in the family that. But typically, it's going to be people outside the family that are people that are in your world of influence. Could be from business, could be from social, could be from community, could be from church. But you know, who are your five? Who are the five people that today, if you really had a burning need for some counsel, some wisdom from somebody who would give it to you objectively, not have an agenda, but just, you know, truthfully give you feedback, whether it was a critique. Or help or resources, who would those five people be? Could you name them today? Could you put their name down right now on a piece of paper and say, yes, these are the five. I could call any one of these five or all five if I wanted to and get some honest feedback about some decisions I'm wanting to make in my life right now. When you have that kind of a group that you surround yourself with, it's so much easier to go through life and not feel like you're all alone and you're making decisions in the void or the blackness or the darkness, because we can only see what we can see. You know, our life is unique to us. Mm-hmm. We have a perspective. We have belief systems that are unique to us. I'm not saying they're bad or good. I mean, they are what they are. But not everything we believe in life, none of our experiences provide us with actual truth. And I think we have to be willing and open to hear from other people that we respect. Sometimes it hurts a little bit if someone questions or asks us questions to give us better clarity. But it's only, again, people that want to help us, not to harm us.
Yeah, that's real important to have that honest, supportive group of people that you can work with. Well, gosh, we're down to the end of the show, David. But I want, if you could, maybe spend a couple of minutes and talk about Freedom Founders and what that's about.
Sure, Robert. So Freedom Founders just kind of happened organically back about 11 years ago when I had some colleagues in dentistry and medicine just ask me, you know, how I was able to leave practice at a relatively young age. And it was, you know, it was because I had the real estate on the side that I had built up. And so they wanted me to show them how to do it. And I said, well, it'd probably be easier if you just piggybacked on some of my investments, and that way you can see what I'm doing and also get a return on your money. So kind of like private capital investors. That started very small and just grew over time to where today it's a collaborative community where I don't go out and find the investments, but I have people that have been in my world, my network, for, you know, decades, who are actually people that make a business in certain niches of mm-hmm. real estate, and allows my colleagues that are busy in their practices have a place to invest their capital to the extent they want to into real estate. So it's a community that it's a connecting community. I teach. I kind of translate between doctors and real estate people because I've lived in both worlds. And it's a place where we really do help people find their next and develop their Freedom Blueprint plan. So that's in essence what Freedom Founders is and does today.
Well, great. Well, thank you. And, you know, it's wonderful you're kind of putting together the people who, you know, who draw from your experience, you know, the two and being a connector, because that's really important. Well, David, now if people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they best do that?
Yeah, best way would be through the website freedomfounders.com. Or the other one you mentioned, which was drphelps.com. Typically, most messages go through to my great assistant Lindsay, who helps me manage my time, my calendar, and my communications. She's so good. That's the best way. Also, I have a blog you mentioned earlier, a Dentist Freedom Blueprint podcast, which isn't just for dentists. It could apply for a lot of people, so they can connect with me there as well.
Yeah, great. Everyone needs a Lindsay.
Everybody
sure.
needs a Lindsay, yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did as well, Robert. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Dr. David Phelps. We've been talking about his new book, What's Your Next? The Blueprint for Creating Your Freedom Lifestyle. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, drphelps.com, and it's drphelps.com. Or you can find out about that mastermind community, the freedomfounders.com. And again, you can find out more about the book by simply going to findyournext.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at byteradio.me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.